buttons do I press again? That's right.
Robots Radio presents...
Rated M for Mature.
Welcome back to the download. We get extra silly in between stuff just because we know you guys can't see what we're doing.
Yeah, this new longer intro where we can hear it playing, it's really bringing out some silliness.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I am the silliest. No, I'm actually not the silliest. I am Jameson, and this silly goose is Brenna.
Hey, wild goose. Silly. I like wild and silly.
Okay. You can be wild anytime and silly.
Anytime I say silly, I just really want to go lispy on it.
Lish.
Silly. It's so silly.
You need to sit back just a smidge.
Tell me what to do, you were white
talking,
man.
You were talking too much into it. It was making you sound like this.
Maybe I wanted to sound like that.
Okay.
That was aggressive. All right.
Good. So as always, the website is up and running. So if you want to find just about everything, that is the place to go about us. There is no special guest this week. We will have a guest next week, though. Yeah. So we are sponsored by Loot Crate, Gamefly, Green Man Gaming, NordVPN. I talk about them all the time, but the holiday season coming up, now's the perfect time if you want to get in on some of these. You know, Loot Crates can make great and super easy gifts for people. Like, literally, you can just wrap the box it comes in, hand it off to someone. They get all sorts of cool little merch, whether it's shirts, socks, gaming, pop culture, comics. You name it, they got it. So,
or you can be real cheap and then repurpose all the things you get inside the box.
I mean, that's what I would do, is I would open it up, take right? out what I want, and give away what I don't. What are they going to know? Heck, I'd buy right? a couple boxes for myself and do that, just so then it doesn't look like.
Right.
And then you get a variety, too, because they do different themes for months.
If you get a tiny, shitty action figure from me, then you'll know what's up.
So yeah, if you use the link and the code robots radio, you get 15% off. Additionally, if you want to buy video games, Green Man Gaming, we are sponsored by them. You simply just use our link. You get to purchase all the video games that you're already purchasing and want to play. And we get a little piece. So that's the two highlight this. More announcements and news after game release dates at the end of the episode. So, big news this week. Pretty much the only thing we're going to talk about is Xbox. And we're going to talk about Xbox buying Bethesda. Like, that's like the only real thing.
Right.
That
happens. If I see another meme about like Xbox buying Bethesda and them equating the amount of dollars to the amount of bugs, ridiculous.
There's a lot. It's a lot of shekels. 7.5 billion shekels is a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, they can afford it. It's not like they're going to make it all back.
Oh, in all honesty, if we were talking Bethesda 5-10 years ago, $7.5 billion wouldn't be enough. But we're talking modern Bethesda, $7.5 billion is a steal for Microsoft. They got a ton of great IPs, and they inherited a company as well. Only thing they care about, though, is the IPs. The company is just kind of a bonus. Because they can staff whoever they want on these titles. They don't even have to. They could shut down Bethesda and fill it with Microsoft Studio employees. And all that matters is they have the rights to make those games. That's all that matters. But Bethesda is still a main figurehead. So it was a pretty well-timed announcement. A day before the Xbox Series X and S pre-orders. So it definitely builds some hype, and it kind of reestablishes Xbox as one of the leading like RPG consoles. Like, the Xbox 360 used to be really well known for having a lot of these first party RPG titles like Fable. Remember Fable?
Oh yeah. I haven't heard of that game in forever.
I'm actually interested to see what the new one will be like, especially now that I have PC. It will run a lot smoother. But Fable used to be like a really, really popular series that people were like, I'm buying an Xbox to play Fable.
Right. It's interesting Microsoft doing this, because in the gaming world, like, they were doing well, obviously. They didn't really care too much about consoles, but now with buying Bethesda and possibly other companies, it's almost like they're getting back into it.
I think,
like, back into it. Go for it.
Yeah, I see where you're going, and I was going to elaborate on it. And I think what Microsoft sat down was like, all right, we've got the console, we're building our streaming platform, we're integrating with PC. What are we missing in terms of our competitors? And I think it always came down to first party titles. That was the biggest thing that hurt them with the Xbone, was first party titles. So they're like, well, you know, we'll just buy more studios. And that was a hell of a purchase. That, like, Bethesda is like one of the, like, top five, top 10 major studios. You know, ignoring the quality of their games, they still are a top tier AAA developer, or quadruple A, if that's what we're going with nowadays.
Oh my god, ridiculous.
I want to be a quadruple Z developer.
What is it even? What in the hell is that?
Because we'd be Z best.
I saw you think of that in like a millisecond before you said it. I'm disappointed.
It's actually what made me think of it with the Z is because there's a common study case you do in accounting for a company called ZZ Best, and it was a house cleaning company that basically, like, faked that they were cleaning houses and was just collecting massive amounts of, like, money. It's a fraud case. But that's, anyway.
You back in school, Jameson?
Oh yeah. So, you know, both Todd Howard of Bethesda and Tim Spencer of Xbox, you know, they both had all sorts of remarks to say, and basically, you know, they're both excited to have each other as partners now.
Right.
And my guess is that Bethesda was struggling.
Yeah,
because there's no reason for them to sell if they're doing well.
And you know what? They might not be struggling necessarily on the money front, even though it's not as great as it used to be. They still have a lot of titles that can float them. But I think maybe in the creative department, and that's where, like, a new, fresh partnership for games, and with Microsoft being kind of hot right now, I feel like, you know, Todd Howard is like, this is great. We're going to get some new, fresh eyes that aren't a part of Bethesda. You know, people that know what they're doing. You know, you hire new people every day for Bethesda, I'm sure. But, you know, people that are leading projects and creative designers. And I don't know. Who knows? This might be really good for making Bethesda hip again.
And I do think part of it is money, that Bethesda now no longer has to bankroll their own projects. You know, they can tap into some of Microsoft projects, but they also get to tap into Microsoft's resources. You know,
yeah,
all of their, you know, 13 plus studios that are under Microsoft, you know, they get, you know, inside access to their console system. So it definitely only helps Bethesda as well as it only helps Microsoft.
Right. So it seems like a really good union.
It does. It really does. And I think we're going to see a much higher, I think we're going to see a return of old Bethesda, that we're going to start to see a much higher quality of game from them, compared to them trying to crank out games the last couple years to, like,
Jameson.
Yes.
That means that one of the first titles, really, not one of the first, but probably one of the newer first titles that are going to be under this sort of marriage is the next in the series of Elder Scrolls.
Yes, and people, Sony fans were throwing a fit at the potential of Elder Scrolls and Starfield. They're both two next big titles being Xbox exclusives. And some people are saying it's like, oh, you know, Microsoft's not going to do that. You know, Bethesda will continue to make games for everybody. And it's like, guys, come on. Look at it this way. If Sony had bought Bethesda, you think Sony is going to let Bethesda make games for and sell them on Xbox? No.
I don't see it looking good. I think that Microsoft right now would make a better game with Bethesda than Sony would.
Well, I'm just saying from the aspect of people saying it's like, oh, Bethesda's not going to make exclusives for Microsoft. It's like, no, they're going to. That's the whole point of a deal like this. You know, and that was what I was getting at, that if Sony were the one to buy it, you can bet your ass that it's only going to be Sony exclusives.
I mean, Sony does, like, only exclusives, honestly. All of their titles end up being exclusives.
Yeah. Microsoft has, and Bethesda have stated that both Deathloop and Ghostwire Tokyo will remain time release exclusives for Sony. So both games will be exclusive to PlayStation for a period of time. They haven't stated what yet. Before they will be available on other systems. So they're still honoring their original agreements, but
that's nice.
Yeah.
This also seems like they kind of got a really big name under their belt as Microsoft. And if they want to continue acquiring other companies and the gaming business, I mean, who's going to say no to a team that already has Bethesda with them? You know, what if you do partnerships or something like that? It just looks good in general.
Yeah, speaking of partnerships, the big one that people are now fantasizing about, Fallout fans are fantasizing now that both Obsidian and Bethesda are under the Microsoft banner. They're like, Fallout New Vegas 2, are we going to get that? Which, you know, I totally get. People really love Fallout New Vegas, but...
It's such an old game, though. You're going to make it 2 now?
Yeah, if that's what people want. But I think the Fallout series needs a real revamp. I think Fallout would benefit more from them doing remasters of older Fallouts than pushing in a new one. I think if they did like remasters of Fallout 2 or Fallout 3, you know, some of their real like titles that put Fallout on the map, I think that would be a lot more well-received, bringing them up to standards with graphics and gameplay and add new features. I think people would be far more receptive of that than a, you know, kind of half-assed Fallout 5, kind of like Fallout 4.
Yeah, and maybe they can bring in new ideas and test things that they would put in the new Fallout game. I guess, yeah, building the hype, because right now if you launched a new Fallout, I don't know if people would care that much about it, because the flame has kind of died on Fallout in general, especially with 76 going the way that it did at launch and just with all the bugs that has been going on. So lost a lot of fans. Obviously, the hardcore fanboys and girls out there will continue to play it. But yeah, I think you're totally right.
Yeah. And so, you know, we've even seen some former veterans of Bethesda coming out saying, you know, that they would be interested in coming back to work on titles under this new partnership. So I think it's only going to mean good things. I'm excited to see what the next title will be. I know that Deathloop is scheduled for sometime next year. We don't have a date yet because they just pushed that back. And then I don't think they've even given us a date on Ghostwire Tokyo. Let me double check that real fast. Sometime next year.
Yeah. The first title of a full partnership without, you know, the pre-existing Bethesda games is going to be interesting. I want to see what, I hope they start a new series.
It's, I think
Starfield. Like a brand new series.
I think Starfield is up next, if I remember correctly. Right. That Starfield is up first, and then that Elder Scrolls 6 will follow that. We'll probably see a Doom or a Wolfenstein somewhere in the middle of all that. But Starfield is what people are excited for because that is a brand new IP.
Right.
So additionally, the first Bethesda game will arrive on Game Pass this week on October 1st. Doom Eternal. And it's Doom Eternal will be arriving on October 1st. That was pretty much it. I got sidetracked reading something. So that's already, like, you know, a huge step up for them. And Microsoft's even commented that they aren't done, that they will, you know, continue evaluating other potential studios. And if, you know, they're...
That's a little terrifying, to be honest.
It really is. Like,
I'm not done with you. Get over here. It's in the same way that kind of scares me, like Walt Disney. Just that whole company buying literally everything and all the rights. It's kind of insane.
Yeah, they own a lot of companies already, like more than you realize. Like, let me pull it up here. So their current subsidiaries, they have 343 Industries, which does Halo.
Wow. Yeah.
They used to own Bungie before Bungie left, and so when Bungie left, they established 343, and then Bungie and 343 made a Halo together before Bungie left. That was Halo Reach, one of my favorite. Compulsion Games, Double Fine Productions, which has some people from LucasArts, In Exile Entertainment, they make Wasteland, Bard's Tale, Mojang, obviously, Ninja Theory, Obsidian Entertainment, Outer Worlds, Fallout New Vegas, South Park Stick of Truth, Playground Games, who does Forza, Rare, they do Sea of Thieves, Battletoads, a whole bunch of other stuff, Viva Pinata, if you remember that game, The Coalition, their Gears of War, they took over it after Microsoft bought Gears of War from Epic Games in 2014. The Initiative, which is their brand new quadruple A studio.
God.
Turn 10 Studios, which also does Forza. Undead Labs, which does State of Decay. World's Edge, which is in charge of Age of Empires. And then the Xbox Game Studios, which does random sort of games. So, lot of...
Good Lord.
Yeah. Yeah. Now Bethesda. Like, who else?
And they're not done.
I know. If they start, I have a feeling if they start acquiring any more studios, there might be like some antitrust.
There has to be. This is getting really close to a monopoly.
Yeah, I feel like they can't acquire too many more companies without without it raising some red flags.
So what if, I mean, I don't know the full rights of this, but could they like liquidate and merge companies?
Oh yeah, they could do whatever they want.
So then, obviously, why don't you just take smaller companies, liquidate like one or two of them, merge them up, and then it doesn't look like you own as many companies as you do.
It's easier for accounting if you can have all the subsidiaries laid out. Plus, it's also easier to, if later on they don't want a company wants to leave, or if company wants to buy itself back from Microsoft, it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
There's many advantages to keeping the company as a subsidiary and not fully integrating them into yourself. But we don't need to talk about that. So additionally, Xbox pre-orders unfortunately turned out to be quite a mess despite Microsoft's promises. And, you know, it was just a lot of traffic and no one was really able to handle it, unfortunately. Amazon was broken, basically. Walmart, you know, kept basically by the time people would click add to cart and get to and check out, it would say, sorry, your item's no longer available, or, you know, request can't be processed. So it seems like they were also hit just with tons of bots,
traffic,
scalpers against,
bots,
yeah,
everything, yeah.
Lots of traffic. So
I love how Xbox tried to not, they didn't do it explicitly, but implicitly, just after the debacle with
it,
the
was
video.
Pretty explicit. It was
the whole debacle with that, and then with, you know, pre-releases for it's just like you talked a lot of crap and then it happened to you. I don't know, it seems weird. Like, is no one learning their lesson?
Well, a lot of it is out of their control because it falls on the resellers.
Third party, yeah.
Which apparently the Microsoft store itself ran pretty smoothly. Like, they didn't have too many issues. But yeah, there's not a lot they can do when it comes to the resellers.
Wait, they had an error page. It cannot be requested or found. So they would have error pages on theirs as well.
I saw some people saying they had no issues with the Microsoft store, but yeah, this does say that that they were the official. Yeah, they suspended the page.
Which, I don't know, it seems kind of weird nowadays with, I mean, you gotta know that the traffic is going to be insane. Like, with certain servers going down on certain events and gaming things, it's like, you didn't think that things would crash? Like, I can't remember, it was like an old remake of like an NES or something like that. It was like one of those consoles. And they released it, and as soon as they did, everything crashed because everyone flooded to the site. And it's like, why did you not think that a bunch of now people that were kids when these games came out and actually have money wouldn't spend all of it on like a cool little console?
I think the thinking behind it is that it's easier to turn on additional resources afterwards than it is to have them already enabled from the start and have too many. So like
just.
It's like with the video games. Sure, they'll estimate like
they underestimate by a ton is what I'm saying.
We'll throw out EA and Battlefield here as an example because they always have this issue with their servers at launch. So, you know, they estimate we're going to have 10 million people buy the game day one, start playing. But they might only in actuality have enough servers to handle 5.
Right.
And then as the traffic increases, they can just turn on additional servers. Then it saves them money and resources. I think that's the way most companies handle it, is that they will scale up the resources for the traffic. But in this case, like with the stores and stuff, it's too many requests. And it just overloads the page, and there's not really much you can do about that. Like, even just with the high traffic page, you know, websites, it's still, you know, when you're getting, you know, maybe a million requests in the span of a second, like,
yeah, everyone refreshing.
Even if you're paying for the best web infrastructure, that's just gonna tank you.
Yeah. Seems, I don't know if they could do like a lobby that wouldn't overload the page.
I had a discussion with this with Captain Logan in the Discord over the week, you know, why more people aren't doing the two-factor authentication, you know, having you create accounts, that kind of thing, just to, you know, ensure that actual customers are getting their hands on the products. You know, at the end of the day, the companies don't care. A sale is a sale. Money's money. Yep. Yes, it helps their image if more titles get into the hands of their their actual consumers than it does in the bots and scalpers. But the point he was trying to make to me was, you know, anything in there that slows down your ability to make the sale or to complete the sale as a customer is more likely to send you somewhere else. So if it takes it longer and I ought to go through this process of like, you know, verifying my email address and making an account, I'm more likely to just go to a different website and do it where I don't have to do anything and I can just check out as guest, which is, you know, pretty accurate. But
yeah,
it's definitely interesting. Additionally, the Xbox app got a complete makeover this week. And now this is not to be confused with xCloud. This is the official Xbox app, which is basically like a digital remote for your Xbox on your phone. And I know they've had this, I know they've tested this feature before with something else, but you are able to, with this new update and the new redesign on the Xbox One, you can stream your Xbox One games onto your phone. So you could be like on your phone, you could launch the game, your Xbox will turn on, your Xbox will start playing the game, and then it's streaming from your Xbox to your phone. So it's not a fit xCloud, but it's still game streaming in a sense, which is pretty cool.
Why?
Yeah, it's just another bonus. Why not?
Interesting. I just don't know how many uses I would have out of that. Maybe if you want to play and while you're in the bathtub, who knows?
Or at work.
But you have to be close to your console, I'm guessing. How far?
Internet connection. That's all you need.
Yeah.
Internet at connection.
At work. And... Look at you. I'm going to get...
Yeah. So as long as the Xbox is not completely powered off, it needs to be in its
sleep mode or whatever.
Yeah, the standby mode. You know, because that was the big thing with the Xbox One and the PS4 is that they're always on. So as long as it's in that always on mode and not like hard shut off, it should still work.
No.
But yeah, I'm pretty sure it works anywhere. So additionally, I saw. Go ahead.
Yeah. LTE or a 5G connection.
Yeah. So I think as long as you got your Xbox and your Xbox is powered on with the ability to run the game, you can play it on your phone.
It's not... These phones will overheat in a second. Yeah. Don't... Yeah. And you got to be connected into a battery power, like a source. You cannot play this for more than 20 minutes without it draining your entire battery.
People want to play it on their phone.
You know, it's the same thing with like Tesla. So the materials to make a car of Tesla is like you're at a net loss, and it's actually worse on the environment because mining them right now, the technology is just not as great. But in the long run, you need someone to do this to start so you can improve. Like you need something to improve upon. So I understand why we're doing this, because eventually our phones will be able to handle it and have the battery power and this and that. So I get it, but also.
Yeah. And to go along with this, I saw a great article talking about the environmental impact of cloud streaming and cloud gaming, and it's versus, you know, physical games. And it's 100% true. Like when you think about it, people buy a physical copy. Sure, there's plastic packaging. Sure, there's those compact discs. But how many players do you know of that actually just get rid of their games? Because most of the time, they keep them, like, forever. Like, the actual
I have
gamers.
A PlayStation 2 game that I have a few of them.
So there's far less waste from physical gaming. Whereas if you think about digital gaming and you think about the square miles of server farms that are necessary to house all the servers and run them. And then the electricity.
I was like, going to say.
That's a huge impact. Yes, you know, you still need some of those to run your console. Sure. But the difference is pretty substantial.
Massive.
Between
yeah.
the console and all
well,
that.
Not only do you have to run it on your console, you have to be able to be running it from a server in a different area. So it's electricity in both areas.
Yeah, so there's been a huge push recently for more carbon friendly server farms that are able to have like a net zero effect on the environment, or at least limited footprint.
Right. Did you see that Lego is nearly all renewable energy? Fantastic.
Pretty impressive. But you know, fun fact, the one of the number one places for server farms in the United States, can you guess? State?
I'm thinking somewhere like Ohio with like literally nothing and also in the middle of the country.
Alaska.
Get the F out of here. Oh my God. The ambient temperature is so low.
And there's lots and lots of land. Very cheap
right.
price. No one lives up there.
That is ingenious. I bet you the amount of money they save on cooling these servers. Incredible.
So. Little fun fact, but yeah, it's a little food for thought. You know, I'm not trying to dissuade anybody from
right.
cloud or streaming or whatever.
We can do it. Just you can do it with yeah. more green friendly things in mind.
I mean, if we want to get into it, we could talk about how terrible, you know, cell phones are for the environment and how we're basically, you know, destroying Africa mining for cadmium, which is one of the necessary components for like 90% of electronics. You can talk about how, you know, the electric batteries for Tesla and Prius have like 3 times the effect on the environment than driving a Hummer for its entire lifetime. So
yep.
there's always trade-offs, but that's, you know, a lot of this is, like you said, if someone didn't do it first, then we couldn't improve it.
Yeah. So that's eventually it will get better. Eventually it won't be as wasteful. Yeah. We just gotta get the precious metals to produce a lot of this stuff. Yeah.
Yes. It's definitely coming up with more creative ways to reduce the cost of precious metals, because they are finite.
Right.
So they're finding new ways to
synthetically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very interesting. That if you are intelligent, that's a big, big money
feature. Actually, if you are intelligent and you want to go into physics and study electrical things, please produce us a better battery that is nice and won't blow up.
And not lithium. Small.
Yeah, and not lithium. Please do that.
There's tons of people doing that. Anyway, that was fun. Nice, good discussion. So some of the stories you might have missed. This kind of ties in to Xbox, what we just talked about. So Sony fans are pretty sweaty after Xbox's announcement of purchasing Bethesda, and they are rallying and crying for Sony to buy Konami. Again, not because Konami is making great games, because they aren't, but it's because of all the IPs, all the titles that Konami owns. Castlevania, Contra, and most notably, Metal Gear.
That would be a great pairing, though. I feel like that fits Sony.
Oh, yeah.
I feel Konami and that would be great. I don't know.
But can you make new Metal Gear games without Kojima?
Maybe.
That's the real question. You can do remakes, and that can definitely keep you going for a lot of years. Doing remakes of a lot of those old games, basically like the Resident Evil style.
What if they did an offshoot? Still, so it wasn't.
Can you harness the storytelling capabilities of Kojima?
Maybe.
The other question too is how much do they have on Metal Gear? Like, how much did Kojima leave behind when he left? That's the other.
Yeah, thing. I don't know, and I feel like if they were gonna pair with Konami, it would really only be for that series.
The only reason I could see them maybe doing a reboot of Castlevania with its popularity now that Netflix did the cartoon and stuff, they could totally make 3D versions of Castlevania and people would be here for it. So it'll be interesting to see. Funnily enough, though, this week the Metal Gear games made a return to PC. A lot of the original Metal Gear titles showed up on sale now for PC, some of the other ones, like we mentioned, Castlevania, Contra. They do not look good on modern PCs, let me tell you. Granted, some of the games are like 17, 20 years old, but they could.
It's like when you have a really nice TV, but you watch something that was rendered like, I don't even, years and years and years ago, and you're like, wow, this is actually terrible, because it takes up the amount of pixels they have to like form to make this picture. It just doesn't look right.
Yeah, well, and it doesn't scale either. Like, you also think about the resolution. Like, this was designed for like 480p back in the day,
and for a screen that was probably a quarter of the size.
Yeah, definitely not the 16:9 framing
aspect ratio.
Thank you, that's the word I was looking for. You know, so it's, I think with their return, people are like, I want remasters of this game.
So it'd be a good time for PlayStation to buy it.
I know. I'm telling you, I think remaking, not even remaking, but just making a Castlevania series. Like, can you imagine, like, think Dark Souls style gameplay, but with the Castlevania universe, the horror, the suspense of Castlevania. Oh.
Okay, so what's the art style, though?
I think you go for the modern art style. I think you go for the...
I'm thinking you go for Final Fantasies.
I like it.
I think you go for a Final Fantasy art style.
I could also even see something kind of like Borderlands, not like the Borderlands art style, but that more vector art style that
I could see that.
That anime style. I could see that.
Very bold
as well.
Colors and yeah.
Yeah. The hard
harsh lines. Yeah. Like the black lines, yeah.
Be interesting. Konami, we're watching you.
Right?
You heard it here first. I feel like we call and say so much stuff and just no one listens. No one listens to us, guys.
They should just pay us to sit in a room and come up with ideas.
It's not the only thing I'd come up with.
I don't know what to think about. My brain went like all over the place.
Oh, mine did too. I didn't like it even though I said it.
Yeah.
Black Ops,
take it back.
Black Ops Cold War beta is coming out in October, which is like, you know, tomorrow.
Yeah. Basically. Yeah, I was going to say.
Just about. So the multiplayer beta will come to PC and Xbox, of course, after a PS4 exclusive weekend. And that's if you already haven't been involved in the PS4 alpha. So October 10th to the 12th will be the PS4 exclusive weekend. And then it will become to everybody, as well as PS4 players, the 17th through the 19th.
I miss when I used to care about Call of Duty.
Yeah, I don't.
Like, I miss buying, like, bags of Doritos and Mountain Dew so I can get codes and, like, staying up all night ready for the pre-release.
Little sidetrack here. So, this past week, was Halo 3 turned 13, came out in 2007. That nostalgia train hit me pretty hard. So Halo 3, Xbox 360 was my first like console I myself owned. I got it right at launch. Halo 3 and Call of Duty 2 were the first big video games that I ever owned. Again, that I owned. Halo 3 was my first M-rated game, because I think Call of Duty 2 was teen. So it was my first M-rated game, and I was 13 when it came out, 13 years ago. And, what a game. Like, you definitely don't get that kind of experience with games anymore. There's no more waiting till midnight. There's no more, like, real crazy hype or buildup. I feel like just since everything.
Yeah, because you used to watch it at E3 and then it would, you know, they would hype it up. There would be promotions.
Well, I think it's just the prevalence of the internet. You know, you're constantly, now that everyone's online, everyone's connected, and you're constantly seeing things about games, it just isn't the same. You just get excited about games. But, you know, when you had to, like, when most of the time.
You get so much information.
Yeah. And then back then, you know, you saw game trailers on TV. That's right. Like, I remember seeing, like, the Halo trailer on TV and, oh my God. Did that like goosebumps.
And now I like it, the amount of information I get before a game and how spread out it is, it's, you know, it's not as exciting.
It was it was a different time. It was a different time. And I will always say it, Xbox 360 was the pinnacle of my gaming experience.
I feel like that it was for everyone around that time. Like, it is such an iconic console. It is, you really can't.
It had the largest titles. Like, right. PlayStation was a joke back then. Like, if you were a PlayStation fanboy, no, but like, hear me out. Like, you gotta remember back then, PS3.
They still had God of War and all of the Tony Hawk series.
Yeah, but we're talking like Xbox at its prime. We're talking Halo. We're talking Gears. We're talking Fable. Like, there was some absolutely massive titles on Xbox.
Halo and Gears are that is what made the Xbox.
What else made the Xbox, though, was its online Xbox Live platform. PSN had literally just started with the PlayStation 3, and it was a joke. It was glitchy. It was full of hackers. It was constantly it was hacked several. I remember it was hacked several times.
I remember. Yeah, I used to get emails all the time.
And so it was like trying to compare PlayStation 3 to 360. You just couldn't do it. And I think that was when Sony really started to work to turn that around. Because by the time you get to the end of the PS3 and the start of the PS4, Sony's completely different.
Right.
And
well, they didn't really have anything to compete with before then. No. So, the PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, nothing, really. PlayStation Fat Boy came out.
Yeah.
Ridiculously huge.
Yeah. God, what a time.
Right? What a time today, nowadays, though, with sex games being a thing.
Oh, yeah. Brenna, why don't you tell us about this one?
I don't even know if I can get through this whole thing. So, there has been a game about Peach, one of the characters in Nintendo. It's a sex game, people. And it's been out for 8 years, which is kind of crazy. And it's a hentai-inspired game called Peach's Untold Tale. Unfortunately for you guys, I know you really want to go out there and play it. You cannot anymore. It has been taken down due to copyright infringement. Though they thought they might get away with it because the creator of this said that it's more of a porn parody, and so theoretically it could be used fairly, but they did not get that ruling. The game premise was that you could have sex and be impregnated by Mario's enemies, Goomba, and many others, and then dress up in a variety of costumes.
You'll love to see it.
I think the thing that makes me laugh the most is the developer told his Patreon that he would prefer to be dead than abandon this game. And that's some dedication right there.
That really is.
But 8 years. 8 years. It was a free-to-play game, but people are paying. He collected $175 a month for this.
It's a passion project, that's for sure.
I mean, clearly.
Additionally, a new studio was announced last week, Dreamhaven, from top veterans of Blizzard. They've left Blizzard, former and current members, and to get away from Activision and start making great games again, because Blizzard really isn't. So they are led by Mike Morhaime, which is one of the, he's a former CEO and was a co-founder of Blizzard. So that just tells you, like, off the bat, former CEO and co-founder thinks Blizzard sucks, that he's going to go and start his own studio that's basically Blizzard.
Well, clearly he started Blizzard, and Blizzard was great for a while. Like, it was really good when it first started, and now it's really not. So hopefully with their two new studios, Moonshot Games and Secret Door, they're able to at least harness that new energy. I feel like a lot of companies, when they first start, are really good, and they have a lot of faith in their games and things like that.
I think this will still be a good company, and they will make great games, because Blizzard was always a company of very passionate people. Right. That
the lore.
Yes, that really, really worked hard to create their games and their universes. And they've kind of been stifled on that with Activision now kind of looming over them, you know, wanting the big bucks. And I think, you know, World of Warcraft's been around for so long, and that's even struggling just to keep innovating.
Before it was Activision Blizzard, World of Warcraft should have been done away with.
I think Dreamhaven will be the opportunity that Blizzard should have taken to develop new IPs. They've got such an amazing team of developers from Hearthstone, from StarCraft, from WoW, from Disney. Like, they've really...
So many worlds. Just, it's ridiculous.
So, their logo has got all sorts of different hints and stuff. They got some fantasy, they got some mystery, they got some sci-fi. So, it's... I'm excited. I'm excited to see what Dreamhaven will release. Maybe I can go work for them. Who knows? They are in Irvine.
I'd love it.
You know, it'd be fantastic if they opened their studio like across the street from Blizzard.
Oh my god. That would be grand.
It would be. Among Us developers have announced they have canceled Among Us 2 sequel in favor of just basically combining everything they were going to put in Among Us 2 just into Among Us. So they're just going to more robustly develop and support the current Among Us game due to its popularity, which, you know, nothing wrong with that. I love that. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, obviously, if there's a new game, you're going to charge more money for it, and that's not what they were doing it for. They were doing it because clearly it's popular. I mean, it's an older game and it does need to be updated. So the infrastructure that the game is built on seems like it's going to limit them quite a bit in what they can do. But hopefully they can get enough out with patches and things like that. Maybe, I don't think they'll do DLC.
They've said they're going to do new content, but it'll all be free.
Right.
So
that's great.
Yeah. What's not great is analysts saying that people will happily pay $70 for next-gen titles. And they say this because while game prices have stayed the same since 2005, 2006, with the PS3 and the Xbox 360, they say that people will continue to buy the games because they want the game. That no matter what the price is, they will still buy that game day one because it's something that they want. And then the people that don't want to pay the big bucks are the ones that wait for the deals, and they will continue to wait for the deals. I do see that. I still don't agree with the $70 price tag, though.
I don't think that that's how this works, though, because how often do sales come along on new titles, especially when you can't go to GameStop and buy a used version of it? That's how I would get mine cheaper. As I would go to GameStop a month after the game came out, and there may be one or two copies of a new title that were a little bit cheaper. But you have to wait around for Steam to go on sale or wherever your platform you're buying from. That doesn't happen very often, and it's usually not the big titles. So you could be waiting 6 months to a year.
And this is obviously focusing only on U.S. prices. This is not taking into global prices where games can be considerably more expensive in other countries. Like, I think in most of Europe and like Australia, you know, the equivalent of us purchasing a $60 game is like them purchasing a $90 or $100 game. So
that's absurd.
It's just all $100?
I can buy more RAM for my computer for $100, and like decent RAM too.
Be happy that you live in America.
I could buy an SSD. I could buy an M.2 right now with that.
People always talk about how they'll leave and move out of the U.S. to other countries. And
no, you won't.
Sure, other countries have a lot of great things about them. But the one thing you don't never understand or you don't see until you go to another country is the difference in the economies,
yeah,
and just how much products are available in the U.S. that aren't available other places. And if they are available, they're considerably more expensive. And that's not just, we're not just talking like
get there video games.
You're not helping.
Am I gonna play a game?
No, money. Jefferson. exchange rates. You're not taught. That's what I was looking for. Exchange rates. I kept thinking transfer. It's like, no. Exchange rates.
No. I see.
Yeah.
Yes. When you factor in exchange rates.
I'm saying not even factoring exchange rates, that they're still considerably more expensive.
Right. I have a conspiracy theory with these articles.
Let's hear it.
The more people post about this and the more positivity you see around this, the more companies are going to say this is good, the more consumers are going to say everyone is buying it for this price. That means that it is reasonable. It is not reasonable. We need to publish more articles saying not reasonable, especially for certain titles like Call of Duty, where you're only getting an online multiplayer. Like, get out of here.
Yeah, I've been saying for years that Call of Duty is not a $60 game.
It's ridiculous. And you see indie companies, I know that they don't have as much of an employee base to pay out, but still they're making games that are nice and decent, and they're only charging $30 for their games or $20 for their games. It's insane.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. It could also be another ploy that they could build up the hype about $70 games, and then we get closer to release and they're like, we're making the decision that all games for next gen will be $60. Like, as a way
we're
to like,
the greatest.
Yeah,
yeah,
as a way to like win the people over. I could totally see that as well.
Ugh.
Ugh. Additionally, Amazon has announced their new cloud gaming service. We've known it's been in the works for a while, but it is now called Luna. You can apply for early access. They are pretty picky about who they're selecting. So currently the early access only costs $5 a month. And then it gives you access to buy their $40 controller. Other controllers do work. It's not like Stadia. It's pretty much just a flat fee, and it gives you access to a bunch of titles. And then if you want, you can purchase additional add-on subscriptions to that, like Ubisoft would be a app. Oh. That was interesting. Craig decided to leave.
You're still recording, right?
Yeah.
Now recording.
Well, steady, Craig.
That was odd. Thanks, Craig. Useless. They've definitely gone with the better approach. They're not like xCloud, which has just a growing list of titles. I think this is like the way to do it, is that they'll always have a set of games available, and they'll might bring in other titles. But
it'll be like Netflix.
Yes, but it would be no. I think of it more
like a rotating.
I think of it more like Hulu or something, that I'm paying for Hulu, but if I want, I could go and get an HBO add-on to my Hulu and watch HBO through Hulu, or I could go get the Showtime. So I think it's going to be like that. That's like,
so oh, if I yeah. pay for my Ubisoft, I will always have the titles that are under that.
Yes, and you will get the big titles right as they come out, like Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Whereas other Ubisoft titles might be part of just your normal package because they'll come and go. But by getting right. like the Ubisoft package, then I can get Valhalla.
They're always there. Launch. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I don't have to pay for games. And I think that was one of the stupidest things about Google Stadia, was that you had to buy the game to stream it. Like, dumb.
What's, yeah. So I mean, all the interesting Luna for a name, like Moon.
Yeah, I don't know. But it's off to a much better start than Stadia is, and it's bringing a much more accessible product.
I wonder how this is going to work with Prime.
I'm sure they will have some sort of Prime integration. They've already said that Luna will be integrated with Twitch, so people will be able to stream on Twitch if they're using Luna directly. So I definitely see there being some sort of bonus with Prime, that maybe if you are a Prime member, you get access to more titles or something like that.
I mean, like, I get the student Prime, so I wonder if it'll be included.
Yeah, student Prime is the same as regular Prime. You just get a little.
No, I know. I'm wondering if it'll include the Luna or if it's going to be an add-on.
You have to pay for Luna. Luna will always be something to pay for. And because it's early access, it's only like $5 or $6 right now, but it will be more expensive when they fully launch. So my guess is it's going to be like $10, 10, 12, maybe.
That's it?
Maybe 15 a month.
Wow.
So we'll keep an eye on that. Additionally, if you are a Destiny 2 fan, with the Beyond Light launch in November, you will have to fully reinstall Destiny 2. You have to uninstall, reinstall. And bonus part is that the game will be smaller in size, but they are doing this reinstall because they have a new engine for Destiny, and so they need to have everybody wipe their whole system basically so they can reinstall fresh with the new engine. It makes sense. It's inconvenient, but they're
whatever.
Yeah,
don't even know that it's inconvenient, because you're going to be getting a much better game with a smaller save file.
It's inconvenient from the aspect that I would just normally, if this was an expansion, I would just download the expansion and then I'd be able to continue playing rather than do a full reinstall and reinstall everything. But they're going to be opening up pre-installs well before release date, so that way people have plenty of time, especially if you have a lower internet connection. So additionally, it is the end of an era as Farmville is shutting down. It will shut down at the end of this year after its launch back in 2009. I mean, who even still plays Farmville anymore?
2009? Well, that's probably why they're shutting it down. 2009? Yeah, I remember it being everywhere on Facebook when we were in high school.
In 2010, it hit its peak with over 80 million active monthly users.
Monthly active users? 80 million?
I never played Farmville.
That's stupid.
I thought it was
dumb. I think I played it once, and then I got a million notifications from there on out of all my friends.
I remember those random Facebook games. There was a lot of them.
Oh my god. Do you remember Candy Crush was on there?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Lastly, the actor who plays Eskel in the Witcher TV series had to leave the show due to some scheduling conflicts because of the delay with COVID-19, which is unfortunate. So they're having to recast and refilm some scenes. And they have brought in, the actor was Thu Ramison, and now they have brought in...
Basil?
Yeah, Basil. Ed and Benz. So they're, you know, apparently already back to work. So wasted no time. But that'll do it for this week. Upcoming release dates. Last week we had the Untitled Goose Game co-op update and PC release. You can definitely expect some Goose-related shenanigans in the near future. We're gonna figure it out. It's only local co-op. So it's Yeah, it's something that we have to do together. So whenever we're together next, you can expect some shenanigans. Serious Sam 4, Trollhunters Defenders of Arcadia, Mafia Definitive Edition, and this week we have Warzone Season 6, Feather, Hazmat Hijinks Total Meltdown, Star Wars Squadrons on Friday, and Crash Bandicoot 4. Great stuff. Also, I think Baldur's Gate 3 early access is this week too, if you're a part of that. But that'll do it. Keep an eye on the YouTube. We post our podcast episodes there, but we have some Let's Play stuff coming for you guys very soon. We have a friend who is an excellent video editor. He is converting our gameplay into high quality watchable videos for you. It takes a little bit of time, but the quality is much higher. So we thank him for that. And I'm sure you guys will really enjoy what we have for you. So as always, thank you all for listening. We really appreciate you. You know, thank you for sharing the show, just telling your friends, leaving a review, all those things support us in ways you do not even imagine. And to those who do support us the extra mile on Patreon, Dr. Brandroid, Durka, Poolfire93, Miller, Cyber Shorty, Old Stray Dog, thank you very much. And you can find us on any podcast streaming platform. I actually submitted us to be added to Amazon Podcasts now.
Wow. Yeah. There we go.
So hopefully we'll be on that platform very soon. And we're on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at DL Gaming News, except Instagram, we're at GooseCatProd. And you can follow us individually on Instagram at DL_Jameson.
And at DL_MotherGoose.
And that'll do it. Another episode in the books. We'll see you guys next week. Good luck. Have fun, everybody.
And remember, keep your goose loose.
Ahoy there, ye landlubbers. Avast, my name is Captain Logan, and I'll be your guide out on the Sea of Thieves. If you love the idea of stealing treasure, cutting down cursed skeletons, fighting off krakens, and raiding forts filled to the brim with shinies, then Sea of Thieves is the game for you. Join me each week as I dive into the news and bring back the nuggets of information that any sailor worth their weight in salt would desire. You don't have to be a pirate legend to gain access to my podcast. Just search for Keelhauled, a Sea of Thieves podcast in your podcast app of choice, or head over to robotsradio.net or captainlogan.podbeam.com and get ready to set sail for adventure. Arr.
Have you ever wondered how deep the Elder Scrolls lore rabbit hole goes? Have you got a grasp of the basics and want to find out more about the universe? Written in Uncertainty is here to help you. We'll be mixing in philosophy, theology, and whatever other theory is useful with Elder Scrolls texts to untangle some of the biggest questions in the series, like what are dragon breaks, how does Chim work, where did the Dwemer go, and more. Check us out at writteninuncertainty.com or find Written in Uncertainty on any podcatcher. Thanks for listening, and catch you later in the grey maybe of Tamriel.